The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio with Donal Kavanagh. It's a Wednesday morning. It's the 7th of June 2023. And if you are one of those thousands of people in Donegal who are doing either the Leaving Cert or Junior Cert exams this morning and you're on your way to your exam centre, we wish you all the best. Our thoughts are with you. And do your best and don't panic. That's really all we can say. It brings back memories of my Leaving Cert, which was a quite a while ago at this point in time. 41 years. No, he lies. It's actually 42 years. Okay, let's move on. It's Donal, as I say, on the 9 till noon show. Let's look at the local papers this morning. But before we do, just a reminder that you can contact the show and your views and your perceptions and your take on the day's news and the day's events and the day's issues are what drive the show and what make the show what it is. You can text us or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. Call us on 074 91 25000. Caroline and Niamh taking your calls. Caroline producing the show as well this morning. You can use our social media challenge. It's at Highland Radio on Twitter. It's Highland Hub on Facebook. Don't forget, by the way, on Facebook, you can watch the show as well and you can see the show unfold. You can see all our Zoom callers as they join us, and also you can interact via the Facebook and YouTube channels too, if you so choose to do. We are comments at highlandradio.com, of course, if you choose to email. Now, let's look at some of the papers, a few locals. First of all, Finn Valley Voice this morning, the headline, "Employ more firefighters." Councillor Martin Hardy, "Retained firefighters cannot be expected to be available 24/7. Slee McGlynn writes that Councillor Martin Hardy says more firefighters do need to be employed by Donegal County Council yesterday, the first in a series of one-day actions in a dispute over working hours and pay began at fire stations across Donegal and the rest of the country. We spoke yesterday to Kevin McKinney from SIPTU, and Kevin did tell us this will activate the situation. It will increase and it will become more serious as time goes on. Looking also at the Inish Times this morning, tests show concrete blocks breaching EU regulations. A report on testing of concrete blocks produced in Donegal submitted to the European Commission as campaigners compare formal complaint against the Irish state. Declan McGee writes that concrete blocks that were found to have three times the level of pyrotite that's allowed under EU standards. That's what the Commission has been told. Block campaigners have told the European Commission that pyrotite remains a major issue in blocks produced in this county. Donegal Post this morning, the main headline, "Game changer, broadband connection network allows our immigrants to come home. I want to be able to do in Malinbeg what I can do in Manhattan," Minister Heather Humphreys told those gathered for the launch of Donegal's Broadband Connection Point network. The Minister for Rural and Community Development was in the Sean School in Malinbeg, home of one of the Broadband Connection Points, and that took place yesterday. Minister Humphreys also in Donegal today. She's launching that Major Islands programme later on today on Aran Mór. Indeed, we did speak to Minister Humphreys last evening, and you can hear some of what we discussed when I caught up with the Minister at the opening of the new DLDC offices in Letterkenny, so you can hear that a little bit later on in the programme. Irish Independent this morning, as we move on to the Nationals, explosion in new scams driven by move away from cash, warning after a 560% jump in bank accounts being taken over and cleaned out by criminals. You'll have heard Michaela mention this on news this morning. There's been a massive rise in financial fraud and claims, prompting a call for more action from government. YouGov the figures show a 560% jump in the number of bank accounts being taken over by fraudsters. This is all based on the back of figures which were provided to Donegal Deputy and Sinn Féin Finance spokesperson Piers Doherty by the Department of Justice on foot of a question that he tabled in the Dáil. Irish Times this morning, thousands flee as Russia is blamed for attack on dam. Collapse of major hydroelectric dam on Dnipro River causes ecological disaster, and somewhat predictably the Kremlin says the Ukrainian side committed deliberate sabotage as a distraction. Thousands of Ukrainians faced evacuations from their homes near the Dnipro River after the huge Nova Kakhovka dam was destroyed. Kyiv and top European officials described it as a potential war crime committed by Russia's invasion force. Irish Daily Mail this morning. Spending watchdog warns, do not go on a splurge. Report says excess funds will be needed to support our ageing population and urges against a giveaway pre-election budget. Ireland's soaring elderly population has prompted the state's spending watchdog to warn against that giveaway budget and instead use excess funds for future pension costs. The Irish Fiscal Advisory Council will today issue a report that warns there is currently no credible plan to address the projected spending that will be required to pay for an ageing population. The government's facing pressure to use bumper exchequer returns to cut taxes. It's also been warned it must either reduce pension benefits, increase PRSI charges, or raise the retirement age to tackle the pension time bomb. That's according to the Irish Daily Mail. Also a picture on the Irish Daily Mail this morning of Prince Harry. Harry in the witness box. Oh, how he must have longed for the schmaltzy embrace of Oprah. And that's a whole article in there. And you can read plenty about the trial if you so choose in the papers, particularly the tabloids. They all appear to be featuring that story on the insides. But the three red tops in this country are all united in what's making the front page. Indeed, it's making the front page for the second day in a row, and it is the arrest of Liam Byrne in Mallorca at the weekend. Irish Daily Star, main headline, I'll fight like L. Mob boss vows he won't return from Spanish jail. Also on top there, GAA hero Teddy dead at 57. And that's a picture of Teddy McCarthy of Cork, the only person ever to win hurling and football All-Irelands in the same year. He did it in 1990, the year this radio station came on air, indeed the year I moved to Donegal. So a one-off feat that's never been repeated. And sadly, Teddy passed away yesterday. Also, on the back of the Daily Star, one of the big sports stories at the moment, Greenpeace shockers Saudis swoop to end golf's civil war. Saudi Arabia engineered a stunning backdoor takeover of professional golf after the announcement of a shock peace deal between LIV Golf and the established tours. And when you look at how people like Rory McIlroy fought tooth and nail against that whole LIV tour, he now finds himself in a very, very strange situation. Irish Daily Mirror this morning, the Byrne ultimatum. Mobster refuses to go back to UK after arrest in Spain. Liam Byrne is to fight extradition from Spain to the UK on arms trafficking charges. He refuses to go back. He may not be given a choice, depending on the outcome of legal proceedings, which have already started in the Spanish court. Also there, a shockers, GAA dual legend Teddy, 57, dies suddenly. And the Irish Sun this morning, again, cocky burn in gun wrap fight, cartel chief to battle extradition. It's the same mugshot, which I presume has been released this week by Spanish police, of Liam Byrne. The same picture appearing on all of the red tops this morning, and the smaller headline on top. Harry's big day in court. Prince Harry called mum, Diana's butler, Paul Burrell, a two-faced in court yesterday and said he'd feared that James Hewitt was his dad. And you can read more about that on the Irish Sun. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's, as I say, Donald Cavan with you until 12 midday on the show today. We're going to take a short break. Now, there has been a lot of discussion over the years about septic tanks, and it's a very pertinent issue, obviously, in a county like Donegal, where there is a significant amount of one-off housing, and therefore a lot of houses in this county will be dependent on septic tanks for their environment. And there are calls for changes in regulations governing tanks, and in particular, water well grants. Now, leading those calls at the moment is Councillor Micheál Nochtain, who joins us on the line. Micheál, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald, and good morning to your listeners.
Micheál, at the moment, in order to avail of the septic tank grant, it must have been registered by February 2013. Now, that is pretty much 10 years ago. So anyone who's built a new home over the course of the past 10 years is going to find themselves excluded from this measure, it seems.
Yes, Donald, and that. But basically, Donald, the houses that would have been built since 2030 would be nearly built to the new standards. But basically, the problem is now that means there's a lot of homeowners in Donegal that are basically discovering that their septic tanks are not viable. And basically, when they go to look for the grant, they realise that they're not registered. Now, basically, over a month ago, we had a workshop with the environment section of Donegal County Council, and they informed us that basically Donegal was one of the lowest counties to register for these grants. So basically, you have a lot of homeowners now at a financial, you know, disadvantage. When they discover, when they go looking for the grant, basically when they come out and the department turns down their septic tank, they have to be replaced, and then they find out they're not entitled to the grant because they're not have registered. So I'm calling on the minister especially to change this, because it's not fair to families. I mean, as you rightly said, it's over 10 years ago. And in addition to this, Donald, the well grant, the house has to be over 5 years old and been lived in. Now, again, you have a lot of young couples that basically are building their own home for the first time, that means. And we all are well aware that Ishka Éireann, which was originally Irish Water, are charging for connection fees. Some families and some young couples are being charged anything from 30 maybe to 60,000 for a connection fee. But yet, if you want to drill for your own well, you cannot get the grant because the house has to be over five, which, again, is a huge disadvantage to young couples and people starting off building.
In terms of the payments that people can avail of, provided they are registered and so on, how significant are they? Because we certainly know in this day and age, anyone who's building or anyone who has built, I mean, they need every grant they can get their hands on. And if you have a situation where someone has been depending on a grant like this and then haven't been able to get it, that's going to potentially put them in a very difficult situation.
Yes, Donald. I mean, the grants that you would get would basically cover 80% of your overheads and that. Basically, what the well grant is in the region nearly of 6,000 and that if you're going to bore. I mean, the septic tanks can be up over 8 grand and that. So basically, these are a big, you know, amount of money for any couples or for any homeowners in the county. And I think basically it's the grant scheme there. I think it should be by every family should be entitled to it and should be able to claim for it. So basically, you know, at the moment it's not fair. I mean, I think these regulations, and I do welcome basically Donegal County Council basically supporting this, and they realise there is an issue here, and there is a lot of families in the county. And, you know, and this is not just Donegal. I mean, this is for rural Ireland, for people living in rural Ireland, because these houses were built basically with their single septic tanks and with their own water supplies. And now basically, if they want to change that, basically, you know, unfortunately, there's no grants there available because they haven't registered by February 2013.
And we know too that, I mean, the issue of the cost of water connections has been a huge one in recent years, and some of the prices being quoted by Ishka Éireann seem, on the face of it, to be absolutely crazy.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you know, I have families and young people basically ringing me that basically are looking for connection fees, and some of the costs that are being charged is unbelievable. Basically, before this, if you had a contractor, basically a contractor was able to do this work, but now Irish Water or Ishka Éireann doesn't allow that. Basically, it's their contractors that have to go and do this, and this is very unacceptable. And also, Donald, basically, the government had launched a new scheme as well, the Croí Cónaithe scheme, which was launched. And this basically was to bring in vacant and derelict properties back into use. And again, these properties would be, you know, in rural Ireland, you know, one-off house, I mean, again, that would have been singly supplied with their own septic tanks. And basically, then people are buying these and discovering that basically they kind of get grants for them. And, you know, that's a very put off for them as well. So I think, you know, basically there has to be, you know, a change here in the regulations, because there has to be a level playing field for everybody. And at the moment, that's not the way it is.
Is this one of those situations where one government department is doing one thing and another government department doesn't seem to know what their colleagues are doing, and they're imposing a regulation which, if not completely impedes, doesn't support the initiative that the second department is trying to do? Because it seems that there is one department trying to bring houses into use and encourage people to buy and encourage people to live in areas and bring houses into use. On the other hand, there's another department saying, no, you can't do that because it's not registered.
Yes, there's a bit of this, but also, Donald, probably when this was brought out first in relation to the grant scheme, I mean, you know, the Croí Cónaithe scheme that came out is only a new scheme, and that mean, and basically this was to bring in derelict houses. Come back basically in February when you had to register for the septic tanks, they weren't even thinking about these properties. But now basically they are thinking about bringing a new scheme. So then you have to look at the regulations that are there for other grant schemes. And basically when you bring in a scheme that's going to affect regulations that are there, well, then you have to change them. And I think that's why this motion I put forward is in relation to change the regulations in relation to the septic tanks and the water well grants.
Obviously, Donegal County Council on a local level has got to implement the regulations imposed by government and cannot change the laws itself. Are you confident that government will take heed of what's being said and being backed by the council and is coming to them from Donegal County Council as instigated by yourself and the government will just sit back and say, well, yeah, maybe we do need to change this?
Yes, Donal, I will be very hopeful. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, if something is not working, and that mean, and the family and homeowners as a disadvantage, well, that's not unacceptable. And I think basically there's an onus on us as councillors and Donegal County Council and all politicians in rural Ireland that basically we lobby the ministers to make sure that this, because this is not just going to affect Donegal, this affects the whole of Ireland and counties, you know, the rural housing there. Because as you rightly said in the introduction, that basically Donegal is a very rural county. And basically, you know, there's a lot of one-off houses. I mean, and all these are basically serviced by a single septic tank and by their own water supply. And basically, if you want to upgrade, it's not a matter of upgrading. Some of them are basically being deemed not acceptable going forward, and they have to be upgraded. So basically, then the families are discovering that there's an onus on them then to get them changed. But I mean, when they go to apply for the grant, unfortunately, it's outside the regulations, they haven't registered. And I think that's a huge, huge disadvantage for the homeowners.
There was a lot of talk about septic tanks when these new regulations were coming in 10 years ago. A lot of concern at the level of inspection, a lot of concern that householders could find themselves facing significant costs. What then happened was the system seemed to bed in. We didn't hear about that for a while. Are we in a situation now where there are effectively our chickens coming home to roost?
Yes, I mean, you know, and I think basically the department and the environmental section have stepped up basically their inspections, and there's a lot more inspections going on, that mean, and there's a lot more basically families contacting me, and that's why I moved this motion, because basically now people are discovering basically when the department come on to them and they're in relation to septic tanks, they discover, oh, I haven't been registered, and now there's an issue because my septic tank has to be upgraded and I kind of get the grant. So that's why I moved it, because basically it was families and young couples that basically ring me in relation to these, that basically I moved this motion, that basically there was a loophole here that needs to be changed, and I think for the betterment of everybody they have to be changed.
Councillor Micheál Nochtan, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Donal.
That's Councillor Micheál Nochtan there, that issue with septic tanks. As Micheál said there, he has raised this issue in the Donegal County Council chamber. He's received the backing of the council, and the issue is now going to Dublin with Donegal County Council's imprimatur. Now, I want to go to Buncrana, where there's a new development at Crana View, but there is some issues about the site traffic going through a local housing estate. Let's go to line two and say good morning to Don. Don, how are you?
Not too bad, man. How are you?
I'm grand, thank you. Right, we know that this issue has been raised on your behalf, done by Councillor Jack Murray. Work is being done in the area, and your concern is site traffic is travelling through your own estate, and that's causing you specific worries and problems.
Basically, what's been happening this past 3 months, I got in contact with Councillor Jack Murray about 3 months ago and asked him to, you know, to try to get a meeting with the house manager just to discuss our fears about excessive traffic going through, you know, through the site or our park. It's going to be a live building site. I think there's 16 properties being built. We have no problem with the properties being built. We're quite happy to see council houses being built. But there is an alternative, safer route into the proposed site. And the council haven't even had the manners to get back to Councillor Murray to say the Waller won't meet us. Did you know they're just bulldozing their way through here and they just said, well, that's it. It's been done this way and that's it. And the plan has been awarded and you've no say in the matter whatsoever.
So from your point of view then, effectively, you believe that this is being bulldozed through, as to use your own phrase. You've got Councillor Murray discussing, I'm sure you've raised it with other councillors as well. None of them are getting any positive word back from the council.
Councillor Murray can't get a word back one way or another. I was texting Jack yesterday, and he said I'll email him again. I don't know how many emails or many messages he sent them, but no response. No, and we find that all that we're asking them to do is look at our concerns about the site traffic, heavy machinery, and all the rest of it going through right through the middle of the housing estate. You know, and it's a wee narrow road coming onto the Cockhall Road, which is a very busy road. There's two traffic, the traffic islands, the Cayman Islands, and side of it. The road's been narrowed there with the traffic islands there, the Cayman areas there. And there's a road up Cairnish Pass, which has got traffic lights at the bottom, which would be much easier managed, a far wider road that drives up alongside a housing estate, doesn't go on through the housing estate at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only a loop of about maybe 150, 200 yards where they can put a temporary road onto the proposed site. But they wouldn't even talk this. You know, we find it very frustrating that the county manager or whoever's in charge of the building just won't speak to residents about their concerns.
Are there potential right-of-way issues if they were to use the other area? As you say, they can go up a road and then there's land that they can build a temporary road through in order to get into the development. Is that land in private ownership or is that land owned by the council? Because if that's the case, that might be an issue in terms of just having the right to actually bring traffic up and down that stretch of land if it's not owned or controlled by the council.
Well, the road we're talking about is will be joining onto the new relief road of Buncrana. So I'm assuming the council owned it because they've been talking about building this relief road for 25 years.
Yeah.
Or is it another thing the council talk about something for 25 years and don't even have the property to build it on, which doesn't surprise me either.
Well, I mean, in fairness, these discussions always do start. I mean, there's talk about building a new road, a linked road and bridge in Letterkenny at the moment, and the council doesn't own any of the land yet, but they will have to bring in compulsory purchase orders and all that once they get a firm plan in place. So, yeah, it wouldn't be strange to talk about building a road on land which the council doesn't own yet, and then once they've got clearance to build it, then they've got to go and talk to local landowners. You can't really go and buy the land first and then discuss whether or not you'll build a road on it. But yeah, that could be the case. So, but I mean, even still, that doesn't change the fact that you believe that by coming through your estate, the council and its agents could potentially be putting you and your families and those of your neighbours in danger.
That's the problem, yeah. And to go back to you about the road, I don't think. Well, I'm assuming they've been talking about this road 25 years plus in this area, and I'm assuming now after 25 years. They must have got their act together and bought the land. But then that wouldn't surprise me if the council, you know, the way the council works. But our only problem is the road's narrow. There's a large green area and up at the top of the housing estate. And that's the only green area the kids have to play on. And so the council and their wisdom would say they are going to take 5 or 6 foot off this green the whole way around. You know, it's their green. It's their green that the people in Crana View and Crana Crescent have been maintaining this past 40 odd years. We pay for it to be maintained, the grass cut. The council have never cut it, you know, but they're saying we're going to take whatever we need without any consultation with anybody. It's the fact that they're just ignoring us. That's what's got people's back up. And there is a health and safety, you know, as you know yourself, when there's a live site going on. The heavy traffic and the heavy machinery, it's you know, there's an awful lot of it going up and down every morning, 8 o'clock. There's an awful lot of children in that park. And nobody, our concerns have just been ignored.
Is there a residents' association in the area that is functioning and would have contact with the council?
Well, we don't have a residents' association as such, but we've always had a pretty good relationship with the council, yeah. You know, because we look after the park, we keep the park well, we cut the grass, we do that all. Every house pays for it every year. No, we don't mind. You don't mind keeping your own area clean and nice and tidy.
And that's organised on a local level. That money is collected by one of the residents, and the residents bring in someone to do the cutting or whatever. And it's managed locally. It isn't managed by the council.
Oh yeah. There's a couple of the ladies in the park that do the collecting every year, and they look after it. They the guys come in, they do it, and. There's a couple of residents in the park that do, you know, they're involved in tidy towns and stuff, and they collect any rubbish or litter lying about, they collect it up every day and stuff they got there. And for the country, just to come and say, we're going to take 5 or 6 or 7, I don't know, we're not 100% sure, many feet off the green area. That's the only green area we have for the kids up there.
When is the work due to start?
We have been told the end of June. But we were told... we were informed the other day that the contractor was supposed to come in yesterday and start clearing the ticking, you know, reclaiming a bit of the green area. But to date, nobody has appeared. But we've been told that it's scheduled for the end of June. So that's only, 3 weeks' time. And, you know, it's just bad form and bad. It's very bad manners of the council, we think, to ignore a local representative that has been represented to look after the people and just to blatantly ignore them.
And when were you first briefed? When were you first briefed on the council's plans?
Oh, this is, we've been disputing this this past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. I was, and the reason I asked that is I think I may have spoken either to you or one of your neighbours about this several years ago.
Yeah, you did. You talked to a lady called Bernie O'Neill, and Jack Murray was on, and Councillor Nicholas Cross were on that day.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
Bernie, she was chatting to the residents.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going on about, I think, this proposed development, I think, is about 4 years ago or 5 years ago. And this has always been our concern. And the only concern we've had, unfortunately, some of the councillors put out a smokescreen saying that the residents in Cranaview were against houses being built. We are not against houses being built. I would love to see hundreds of houses being built, because they're very badly needed.
Is this the same site then? There was a discussion, and this is really just from, so I understand what I'm... Was there a discussion about the number of houses, whether it should be 13 or 16, if I'm correct?
Yeah, it was. I think it was started off, it was going to be 19 or something. I think
and then it went down to 16, and then it went down to 13.
Yeah, I think we're back up to 15.
I know exactly where you are now, yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, councillors that voted for this don't actually, you know, as far as I know, don't actually live in this area. They've no idea the geographic area or what. No, the Carcall Road is a very busy road. It's the main link from here and the rest of Mishon. This is a seriously busy road. And for site traffic to be trying to get in and out of Cranaview, it's just a disaster waiting to happen. I know that's just our opinion. But then again, we can have an opinion because the council just are blatantly ignoring us. So as far as we can see, and as far as we're concerned, the council are just going to say, we're going to build, we're going to go through that estate, and there's not a thing the people in that estate can do about it. That's not right. Like, it's bad form.
It does seem strange that the council, in the course of 4 or 5 years, and as I said, I do remember this discussion some years ago, it does seem strange that no official has spoken to you over the course of that 4 years or so. Now, maybe the officials will argue that the councillors are the public representatives, therefore when they speak to councillors, they're speaking to the representatives of you. But then again, if you're saying Councillor Murray isn't getting much response from them either at this point in time, you know, that does raise that into question. Don, thanks for speaking to us this morning. I mean, we'll obviously keep an eye on this one and do keep in touch with it yourself as well. Greg obviously is going to be back in the coming days and you know, be sure to get back and let us know in news and let Greg know on the show so that we know exactly what's going on here. But it certainly does seem, on the face of it, strange that, you know, the council is not communicating with you at all.
No, if the council... Jack Murray asked me, he said, how many people would be there to meet the council? I said, there'd only be 2 or 3 people representing, you know, the park. There wouldn't be 40 or 50 people there. No, it would only be 2 or 3 people. And if they'd answer some of our questions and listen to our concerns about the safety. But as we were saying, as you say, it's strange after 4 or 5 years that they still haven't communicated with any of us. Because I know every one of the people personally that started this up, and they've never been approached by any official of the council.
Right. Don, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. As I said, we'll keep in touch, and we look forward to hearing what happens next. In the meantime, Don, thank you.
Yeah. All right, thanks a million. If I get any more information, I'll pass it on. Okay, thanks a million.
Don, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Right, that was Don there speaking to us from Cranaview in Buncrana. It's the 9 till noon show. It is 24 minutes to 10 o'clock. There is a very interesting new development being launched by Irish banks, along with MABS, the Money Advice and Budgeting Service. We're going to speak all about that after this short break.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio with Donal Kavanagh. Now, we know that the European Central Bank has begun hiking interest rates, and all the indications are that it's a process that has not stopped and will continue for some time. That's putting people under more pressure in terms of loans. It's increasing their repayments and it's having a knock-on effect on their finances. Irish banks are collaborating with MABS, the Money Advice and Budgeting Service, to launch a new website to help mortgaged households that are struggling with those interest rate increases. Delighted to say we're joined on Zoom this morning by Carl Cronin, who's the regional manager of MABS at North Connacht and Ulster. Carl, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
Carl, in terms of this initiative you're doing along with the banks through the BPFI, the Banking and Payments Federation of Ireland, it's important that people are supported, and a lot of people are finding themselves, particularly if they had loans that they could just about manage to service, if they were at the pin of their collar when they were servicing those loans from the offset, once those interest rates started to hit, these people were potentially in trouble.
That's right, Donal. That was one of the catalysts to us launching this campaign with the BPFI, that households are becoming under more and more financial pressure with these increasing interest rates. So there are three elements to this campaign that we have launched this week. The first is an overall awareness campaign to encourage borrowers to talk to their lenders at the earliest opportunity. So whether they're having difficulty with their mortgage, with a credit card debt, with a personal loan, perhaps a hire purchase agreement, the key message is to contact the lender or the credit servicing firm early if they're in difficulty or if they feel they're going to get into difficulty with the repayments as a result of rising interest rates and other financial pressures on the household. So that's the overall key message of this campaign, is to communicate and engage at the earliest opportunity. So in tandem with that then, the BPFI have launched a new website dealing with debt. .ie. And that website is very clearly outlines how to deal with mortgage debt and then also all other types of debt, like the credit cards and the personal loans and the hire purchases, etc., that I just mentioned. And that website explains how lenders can work with borrowers to reach a solution with these problem debts. And there are options and solutions available, and they're all outlined on that website. But the key thing about this website is that on the website, it has all the key contact details for lenders and credit servicing firms. And that's really important, that no matter who your lender is or who your credit servicing firm is, on dealingwithdebt.ie, you'll find the email address or the phone number to get through to the correct department straight away to talk about the difficulties you may have with the repayments on these types of loans.
I know there's always talk about, look, the first thing you do is you go to your bank. And I suppose the bottom line is, if someone is under financial pressure, from the point of view of the financial institution, maybe it's better to get 80% of what you're owed than to get nothing at all. And when a discussion can be had, maybe an arrangement can be reached, maybe a loan term can be extended, maybe something can be brokered in conjunction with yourselves if it comes to that, or in conjunction with somebody else. But I'm sure from the financial institution's point of view, it's in their interest, if they can't get 100%, at least get 80%, get 75%, get something, because it suits nobody if a loan is defaulted on and ultimately you have to go down the road of repossession and all that, because that's what nobody wants, and ultimately that's not going to serve anybody's interests.
You're absolutely correct. And by not engaging with the borrowers or the banks or whoever the lender may be, what will happen ultimately is that legal proceedings will commence, whether it is for repossession of a property, whether it is just to get a judgment order for a credit card debt or a hire purchase agreement to repossess a car, whatever the case may be. And nobody wants to do that. The banks don't want to do that. They don't want to incur extra charges or apply extra costs to a loan that's already in difficulty. So the key message is always to engage. And as you rightly point out, many people may find it difficult to make that first step, to make that first phone call. And that's where MABS come into the equation, that if you feel you just can't make that call to the lender, or you don't feel strong enough to engage with them and talk about possible solutions or other options available, well, then contact us in MABS, because we are the third party, the honest broker between the borrower and the lender, who will sit down and work out what is realistically affordable to address the debts we have here, and then put those proposals to the lenders and work out a repayment arrangement that works for both the lender and the borrower and avoids all the legal costs and the repossessions and whatnot down the line.
And you generally do find the lenders are amenable to deals like that, because, as you say, it avoids a lot of unpleasantness and it makes sure that they're getting something.
That's right. And I mean, they are very agreeable and open to proposals we put to them. There may be some negotiation back and forth before we reach an ultimate long-term arrangement for the borrower. But it's all about the person's circumstances, what they can realistically afford. There is no point in putting in an arrangement that is not going to work from day one. And the lenders recognise that, and they're happy to work within those boundaries. So it all comes down to working out a sustainable budget, a sustainable financial picture of the household, of what's coming in and what's going out, and what realistically is left over to pay back the debts, be it the mortgage, the personal loans, the credit cards. And that leads on to the third element of this campaign that we have launched this week, which is the expansion of a framework agreement that MABS have with the BPFI for late stage mortgage arrears. So we've had this framework in place since 2017 for those in late stage mortgage arrears and how they are dealt with through the banks. But now this framework has been extended and open to all arrears categories, be it early arrears, pre-arrears, there may be no arrears whatsoever, or those who are just starting the court process. So this framework outlines what MABS will do for the borrower, it outlines what the bank will do for the borrower, and sets out the timeframes that we will work through in order to try and get that resolution for them. So that's a really good move for any mortgage borrowers who are in difficulty or maybe about to get in difficulty, that this framework agreement has been extended to open up pre-arrears cases, early arrears cases, as well as the late stage arrears cases that we've always dealt with in recent years.
Do you find that when people come to you, sometimes they come to you in a panic where they believe there's no future, where they're completely snowed under by the level of debt they're in, by this failure to see a way out? And sometimes by sitting down with someone like you and actually going through everything on paper in an honest and open way, perhaps in many cases people maybe aren't quite as bad off as they thought they were, and that there is almost always a way out.
Yeah, we pride ourselves in being an independent and non-judgmental service, and very often we hear people coming into us and they say, oh, am I the worst case you've ever seen? And it's far from it. And our advisors have seen all types of debts and all types of scenarios cross their desk over the last 30 years. So no matter what the situation is, there is always a way to work through the debt situation. And it very much starts with working out what's coming into the household. Are you getting all the benefits that you should be getting? Are you getting all your entitlements? Are you maximising your tax credit allowance, for example? Is every penny that's available to the household coming in? And then we look at what's going out, prioritising the food, the rent, the mortgage, the electricity, the heat, the school costs, the transport, and then working our way through the budget to see what this family actually need on a month-to-month basis, and then what's left over. And even if it's only €100 left over at the end of the month, well, then we have money to go back to the lenders and start offering a repayment plan to them. And once it's all worked out openly and honestly and transparently, the lenders are very open to accepting those proposals. Now, they will look for a review on occasion, be it every 6 months or 12 months, to see if the repayments can be increased. And we will always work with the borrowers through that journey until they reach financial independence once again. So, I mean, for anyone listening this morning who are struggling with debts or possibly think they're going to not be able to manage their debts in the near future because of something that's going to happen or has recently happened, the key message is to reach out and get that help this morning, either from ourselves in MABS or from the lenders who your debts are with, because they will work with you and we will support you in that work to get a realistic resolution in place to make you be able to take that pressure off you, because it is pressure and debt can be a very lonely place to be in, Donald. So to alleviate that pressure and avoid that stress on a household, work with the organisations that are there to help you, be it ourselves or the lenders or the Insolvency Service or the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. There are lots of organisations out there to help people in this position. There is no need to suffer in silence or to carry this stress and anxiety on your own.
Dealingwithdebt.ie is the website that's been established to deal with this mortgage issue in particular. There are several MABS offices in Donegal dotted right around the country. People can contact them by phone. You can make contact online. You can make contact by email. Do so anonymously initially if you so wish. But the main message, as you say, is to people is look, reach out, make contact, and we'll take it from there.
That's right. And all our contact details for all our offices throughout the country are available on mabs.ie.
Carl Cronin, Regional Manager of MABS in Connacht, North Connacht and Ulster, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. This is the Lentil Noon Show on Highland Radio. As we all know, local elections took place in Northern Ireland last month. Derry City and Strabane District Council was constituted. It held its AGM at the beginning of this week, and we have a new mayor. And everything is hunky-dory, and everything moves forward. Or does it? Because there is potentially some drama in the offing. The Alliance Party lost both its seats on Derry City Council, Derry City and Strabane District Council, in the election that took place last month. But the party has now begun a legal challenge against the result. We're joined by Pat McCart on Zoom. Pat, an expert on all things political north of the border, former editor, of course, of the Derry Journal, currently a columnist with the Daily Mirror. Pat, good morning.
Morning, Joel.
Pat, in terms of this challenge taken by Alliance, number one, it seems to be a challenge over the transfer process. Now, I can't think that this could ever happen in a vote south of the border, because there is so much scrutineering done by all the parties and there is such a close eye kept on the counters and on the count process that it's inconceivable that, you know, we've seen fights over two votes and an envelope. I couldn't see a situation developing south of the border where 150 votes weren't transferred before an elimination was announced.
Donald, that's a brilliant observation, because you've just taken the words out of my mouth, actually. I've spent years when I was a young reporter at elections, and there were people, by the way, Donald, I am not an expert in elections, but I used to stand beside people who were, and they could tell you exactly where every vote was going. The problem in the North, Donald, is by and large, it's a first-past-the-post system in the North, and they're not used to this sort of transferring of votes, and they're still not used to it. There were guys I remember from Fannad during the Neil Blaney era, and they were unbelievable. They could nearly predict the election outcome from the very first round of when the votes came out. They could tell you No Hart's number two, Blaney's number one, somebody else's such and such. Well, that's in the North. It's all up in the air. It's until the votes are all counted before anybody can tell you. But what's interesting, Donald, is Alliance got two people elected in 2019, a woman called Rachel Ferguson and a guy called Philip McKinney. Now, Rachel Ferguson, in my understanding, went along to a meeting one night of the Alliance Party and came out of the meeting as their candidate. You know, she was only going along to a meeting as a sort of supporter. So Alliance, they were doing extremely well in the east of Northern Ireland, around the Belfast area. And what they were hoping to do was do well in the west of the province. And suddenly, they had unexpectedly in 2019, they got two people elected. As far as I'm aware, they've opened up an office in Derry, and now they've lost both seats. But the point is, there was 150 votes. The two DUP people got elected, and that left a surplus of somewhere 150 votes. There's a guy called the Alliance guy called Philip McKinney, if I remember correctly. Yeah. He was 49 votes behind, but they didn't count the votes. So that doesn't mean to say he would have got any, that would have changed anything, because the votes could have gone to the SDLP. Martin Reddy was actually elected, the SDLP guy. He's a long-serving councillor. Now, it doesn't say that automatically that Philip McKinney would have got elected, but the point is, we don't know. He might have. And that's where it's now gone to the High Court in Belfast, Donald. That's where I'm getting to.
I mean, I know there is a phrase you hear very often returning officers use here, and I'm not going to quote it correctly, so excuse me, I'll make a mess of it. But they use a phrase along the lines of they will make a declaration on the basis that the remaining surplus of such and such is not enough as to make a potential material difference to the outcome of the count. And it seems in this case, I mean, if you are 49 votes behind and there's 150 votes left to be, now these are surplus votes from two DUP people who have been elected. And very often surpluses are left to one side. If you have a surplus that's smaller than somebody else's vote after they're eliminated, they will very often put the surplus to one side and then go back to them. Now, I can't claim to fully understand the process myself. I understand about 75% of it and I wing it the rest of the time. But I mean, as I say, and I sometimes wonder, you know, and it seems though that on the face of it, if there were 150 surplus votes to be transferred, why that wasn't done does seem to be.
Yeah. Donald, my understanding of it was a guy in England, an elections expert who was just sort of going through the votes. Now, whether he was working in an official capacity or just one of these guys sort of fanatics about elections, I'm not 100% certain, but he noticed it and he got in touch with the party and so on. By the way, a shout out for Eunan Kelly and Donegal, who ran most of the elections for years. I don't think it would have happened under somebody like Eunan from Letterkenny.
It certainly wouldn't. And let's be honest, even if it did, and you referenced Fannad and the Blaney machine from Fannad, and there was also a huge McGlinchey machine with Fianna Fáil in Letterkenny as well, and several other machines right around Donegal. I mean, if there were 10 people counting behind a railing, you were nearly guaranteed there were 15 to 20 party activists leaning over that railing, watching every flick of every finger. And, you know, not one vote would go missing, but at least six people would notice it immediately.
Yeah, but you see, that's the big point. But the other point, see, Alliance did very well this time again. Sinn Féin came first. They got, 39 extra seats. The DUP stayed as it were. But I think the Alliance went up 14 seats in the local council. They're on a roll. They've become the third party in Northern Ireland. It's now Sinn Féin, the DUP, and the Alliance Party, which is a massive change on the demographics and the voting patterns and all the rest of it. And they're doing very well up around Belfast, but they thought they were going to make a breakthrough west of the band this time, and that's what's pushing this.
Yeah.
They want to be seen now as an all-province or all-Northern Ireland-wide party. So that's why they're going to court. And I think they want representation on Strabane District Council so they can say, we have got bodies right across Northern Ireland.
They'll be looking, no doubt, to the next general election as well now. And traditionally, let's be honest, Foyle in particular, Foyle's been a Sinn Féin versus SDLP battle. It was SDLP, then it went Sinn Féin, then it went back to SDLP. Sinn Féin had some internal and administrative issues in Derry City and Strabane over the past number of years. The fact that this time they've got 18 out of 18 elected would suggest that whatever issues may have arisen from those difficulties within Sinn Féin, those issues are, it seems, well and truly answered, at least in the eyes of the electorate.
Yeah, when you're only 18 candidates and all 18 get elected, and they're now the biggest party on the council as well, they're on a roll. There's no doubt about that. But you see, the thing about Alliance can also claim that they're on a roll. Now, maybe not quite on par with Sinn Féin, but they're doing very, very well. Now, Sinn Féin are the biggest party in the Assembly. They're the biggest party in Derry City Council. Demographics are all running. So the implications of all this, Donald, for the future of Northern Ireland has now been hotly contested. Yeah. And everybody's trying to claim their share of the pie. And that's Alliance are trying to make certain that they're not being squeezed out in any shape or form, even down to a council seat in Derry and Strabane Council.
Finally and briefly, Pat, speaking about being squeezed out, we've seen effectively the implosion of the Ulster Unionists at the hands of the DUP. There's an argument that says the SDLP have suffered a similar implosion at the hands of Sinn Féin, but Derry City and Strabane, and Derry City in particular, has always been the outlier. It was John Hume country. It was always the one area you were guaranteed was going to be loyal to the SDLP. The retaking of that seat for Foyle at Westminster by Colm Eastwood was going to be seen as maybe a sign that the SDLP were going back into the ascendancy in Foyle. The fact that they've lost a seat now in Derry City and Strabane, and they've seen Sinn Féin take 18 out of 18, is Colm Eastwood going to be very, very worried at the moment?
Yes and no. Because he won the seat by the last time. Everybody thought it was going to be close. He won it by 15,000 votes. Mm. By the way, there's no obvious standout candidate for Sinn Féin in the Derry area. And as you said, Donald, Derry is still John Hume territory. And unless Sinn Féin come up with a red-hot candidate, it's going to be very hard to overturn 15,000 votes. Colm Eastwood, the Sinn Féin are on a roll, as I said earlier, and maybe they could put up anybody and they'll get the Sinn Féin vote out. But Colm Eastwood performed brilliantly the last time. It's hard to see them losing 15,000 votes in one swing.
Food for thought. Pat McCarthy, thank you very much indeed for that analysis. And we'll be keeping a close eye on what's happening. That's Pat McCarthy there. It's the 9 till noon show. And with apologies to Michaela, news is going to be a little bit late. We're going to take a short break. News with Michaela is next.